When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Alex. You're tuned into another episode of the Market Adventures podcast. It is Tuesday, March 2nd, and here are some results from yesterday's list. Square had a good day, and it had some really good news about them starting their own banking service. PayPal also had a good day, probably in sympathy with Square, but also Kathy Woods and her ARK Invest bought a bunch of shares today as well. Chegg and Airbnb are pretty boring and flat, and APPS had a great day. Gap up and a run up throughout the day, and they even got their price target upgraded to $100. So it's about $6 off its price target, looking for more steam tomorrow. Now be careful out there because we still have a big event on Thursday with the head of the central bank set to speak, Federal Chairman Jay Powell. But that's not the exciting part of this episode. What's even better is the interview I had with Brendan Wood on cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Now Brendan is a father of three, an avid cryptocurrency enthusiast. Brendan started mining Bitcoin in 2011 and constructed a personal crypto index fund, and is now working on merging crypto with traditional finance. So with all this stuff going on, of course, you know, Bitcoin is at the center of all these different things. So listen to this episode with Brendan Wood. You're going to enjoy it. And if anyone you know is interested in crypto investing and trading, this is the episode to listen to. So enjoy part one of this interview.
Hi, my name is Brendan Wood. I'm an entrepreneur from the East Coast of Canada. I started a company called Passive along with another guy named Brendan. In terms of my background, I actually have a bit of an unorthodox background for getting into the finance space. So I started out my schooling career after high school as an engineer. So I was studying mechanical engineering, robotics, automation, artificial intelligence, all kinds of like really cool, heady stuff. And I actually ended up becoming like a programmer in the long run, and eventually used my knowledge of programming to start a company in the finance space.
Interesting. Okay, so your background is in like basically building things, you know, whatever, be it code or machines.
That's right.
And
yeah.
You just took that skill set over into a different industry and started building something in that industry. That's interesting. So Passive, just real quick, just tell us what Passive is. I mean, I had your co-founder on here a couple episodes ago talking about that passive investing strategy. Would just give a quick reminder of what Passive is.
Sure, yeah. So Passive is automation software for your brokerage account. So if you want to invest in the stock market or save for retirement or what have you, a brokerage account is a kind of like obvious and really flexible way to do it. So that's an account where you can buy and sell, you know, stocks and shares and whatnot. So Passive essentially makes it easier for you to do your investing in this account. So rather than focusing on like, okay, I'm going to buy this many shares of a particular company and that many shares of this company, with Passive, you can give it a target and say, I want to have this percentage of my portfolio in this type of asset and this percentage in the other. And then we do all the math and figure out here are the trades you need to make in order to follow your target. And better yet, there's even a button that'll like place those trades for you. So it really takes a lot of the complexity out of investing.
Cool. I actually got the email 3 or 4 days ago letting me know that my portfolio was not in line with my target. It was at around 90%. And then I got an email saying it was 60%. So I have to go in there and actually make some changes myself. But that's the type of stuff that's really cool. So again, that comes from your mechanical background, being able to put something together that you wanted to see and you just made it into reality.
That's right. Yeah. Like the type of school, the skill set that you learn when you do an engineering degree is something that's relatively easy to like transfer to other fields. Like it teaches you to think about design more of like a systems level rather than, I'm working with iron and I'm going to drill some holes in it. It's like you think you're a level above that where you can apply it to pretty much anything. And so I'm, in the space now where I'm applying it to software.
So what you just described is kind of like me, like real barbaric. I look at a car and I see a shell with some holes and a wheel and it works. I don't know how, but it works. And you understand a much higher level than that. So let's talk about cryptocurrency. I know it's a big jump from what we were just talking about, but your co-founder tells me that you have some history in crypto and I don't. So I want you to tell us about crypto. What is it? How does it work? And then we're going to talk about everybody's favorite crypto, Bitcoin.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll take it kind of like from the top, assuming that, you or your listeners haven't really been exposed to the concept before. The idea behind crypto is essentially trying to reinvent the financial system in a way that's like almost native to the internet. So if you think about how currencies typically work in the context of governments and, governments issuing their own currency and that sort of thing, it's referred to as fiat, which essentially means that governments say this piece of paper has value and, you guys are going to use it to pay your taxes and this is what you're going to use for paying each other's salaries and buying goods and services. And because it's so widely adopted and it has the backing of a government telling you to use it, it has value, even though the paper itself is kind of worthless, right? So it's sort of like this emergent phenomenon of like enough people believing something has value, then it actually is. But the trick is that governments have control over traditional currencies and they print money at will and it gives them a lot of control over how economies function. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is essentially a whole lot of power in the hands of, a government, which some people like and some people don't like. So the idea with cryptocurrency is that it's kind of like answer a question. Is it possible to create a currency that's not tied to a particular government, something that can exist on its own in the world without any one individual or organization at the helm directing it or printing more as they see fit? And so Bitcoin, which you mentioned a moment ago, that was like, the first proper cryptocurrency. That was created sort of as a response to the financial crisis in 2008, 2009. So essentially when, there was this global financial crisis, big meltdown, Bitcoin was created like as a response to that sort of behavior where governments were printing money and bailing out companies that many people believed like didn't deserve a bailout, kind of taking advantage of public funds to some extent. And the whole idea was let's create this thing that is independent of any government and can run based on like a sort of democratic consensus of how it should work. And so that was the original vision. And it stayed, remarkably close to that over the years, even though there are some caveats. But it's also created like an explosion of new types of cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin is obviously the big one, but there's probably thousands and thousands of them out there. And they all have like different features, different abilities, Bitcoin was the earliest and the biggest, but it doesn't have all the same features as something like Ethereum has, for example. So Ethereum is another cryptocurrency created sort of in the style of Bitcoin, but completely independent code base and model of how it operates. And it's focused more on programmability than simply being like a store of value. And so they all have different features. And so there's this like, it's an ecosystem of essentially competitive coins trying to become the thing that people use.
Interesting. So again, in my naivete, right, I don't know what the hell you're talking about features. I didn't know there's features. I thought everything was kind of like somebody or some institution creates a coin and that's essentially used to buy stuff. That it's just creating value. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by features? I don't know what that means.
So it's like, what can you do with this coin, this cryptocurrency? I'll use the word coin to describe cryptocurrencies because it's just kind of a shorthand for it. So when you think about Bitcoin was designed to be like a scalable global transaction clearinghouse to allow you to like send these units of value anywhere in the world instantaneously, because it's really just information on this global distributed database or ledger, however you want to call it, right? And that's fine, except that like there's a limited amount of space on that ledger, and the sort of like consensus behind the Bitcoin network is that like they don't want to make more space available than was originally designed, which means that there's a limit to how many transactions it can process per second or per, you know, per block timestamp. And as a result of that, it's like now you have to like pay fees, and you essentially have to like bid up the price of a transaction in order to like get it processed and included in the network, which means that like it's actually not a great cryptocurrency for buying and selling everyday things. There was a time when you could go to a coffee store that accepted Bitcoin and like buy a coffee with Bitcoin. And, you know, I did that and it worked well. But these days it's not really so feasible, because the cost of a transaction is like on the order of $50 or something now. So it doesn't really make sense to spend a $50 transaction fee on a $5 coffee, right? So Bitcoin was created with the idea that it should be useful for day-to-day transactions, but it turns out that's not really the case. But there are other coins out there which sort of have that feature. And that's just kind of like one feature. What about anonymity? So Bitcoin was designed to be pseudo-anonymous, meaning that like you don't have your actual name or ID or anything associated with transactions in the Bitcoin ledger. But it's to some extent it's public in that you can see every transaction on the network. You can see that there was a certain amount of coins that were in this wallet and they were transferred to that wallet. And then this one split and sent ones here and here and here. And you can follow them through. And if you can associate an identity with any one of those points, you can kind of follow the money as it travels through the blockchain. So in that sense, it's not a perfectly anonymous system. And that's actually been used to in criminal investigations and, prosecuting people for tax fraud and that sort of stuff. So there are other coins out there which are designed to support completely anonymous transactions.
What the hell? Okay. Interesting. So can you mentioned two kind of negatives to Bitcoin. Why is it trading at almost 52,000 then? Why are people putting in, not so much people, right? At this point, it's institutions. You have PayPal, you have BlackRock thinking about doing it now. Like, there's a bunch of institutions putting money in Bitcoin. If it has these negatives, why is it valued at $52,000 a coin?
And that's the crazy thing. And I don't have a good answer for you, because I've been following Bitcoin and, interested in it since roughly around 2010. And, never in my wildest dreams would I have told you that I thought it could get anywhere near this kind of value, It doesn't make sense to me, but that doesn't mean it doesn't make sense overall, right?
Yeah.
I think it's because people are treating it like digital gold, right? Mm-hmm. Gold has uses in the real world. You can do things with it, but like the value of gold as it's, priced on the market is way more than the value of it as like a commodity or a bit of jewelry or something you can use to improve conductivity of circuitry or whatever, right? It's primarily a unit of speculation. People like it's a scarce resource. There's only so much gold in the world, and it's really hard to like mine more gold. And people want it, and they believe it has value, and it's held value for a long time. So more people want it, and it's kind of similar to how it is with Bitcoin. There's a fixed amount of Bitcoin that's ever going to be created. Most of it has already been created. The amount that gets created on a daily basis has it gradually kind of decreases over time. So it's a finite resource. People seem to believe it has value and they're putting their money in it. There's only so much of it to go around, so the price goes up,
Interesting. So Bitcoin if you have one Bitcoin, like 52 grand worth of this little this digital thing, can I convert that to Ethereum or no?
You can, but not through like Bitcoin directly. Instead, there are exchanges, which are kind of like a brokerage, but for the crypto world. And the idea being that, you can have an account on this exchange. You can send your coins into the exchange, whether it's like crypto coins or some of them actually support fiat currencies. So you could like wire US dollars in if you wanted to. And then once you have your money in there, it's a marketplace and people are buying and selling coins for dollars and coins for other coins and that sort of stuff. And you can move them around that way.
So it's like you get off a plane and like in the airport, they have those little people where you can give them $1 and you get your money back.
That's right.
In different currency. Okay. Interesting. Now this is good. And I'm sure a lot of listeners don't like, I didn't know anything that you just said until now. Okay. So with the cryptocurrency, okay. So let's talk about cryptocurrency because you mentioned that there's other coins out there. How do you choose what to invest in? And like, if there's so many coins being created all the time, at what point, you know, like if the average Joe can create their own coin, right? At what point does crypto become kind of like loses its value, right? Because if anybody can make a coin, then, you know, what's the point of owning this other coin when you could just go make your own and somehow create a value for it.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And, you know, I think it boils down to the same reasons why, you know, even though you could create your own physical money, you know, you could just use your printer and print off things that, you know, are called, you know, your own banknotes, Market Adventures banknotes, whatever, right? You could give them out to people and try to buy coffee with them, but would they accept them? they probably wouldn't, at least not until you had enough people using them that they actually had some possibility of being passed on and used somewhere else, right? So it comes down to like the social backing behind a coin, like how many people use it, how many people believe in it, how likely is it that someone's going to accept it when you try to spend it, right?
Yeah. Okay. So, and I guess the government's use of like the dollars, because it was a forced currency, so it had to have value. Whereas now, if you create your own, there's no forcing it. You have to create some kind of social backing for it.
That's okay, right. That like, makes sense. If you wanted to, you could go download the Bitcoin code base, change a few numbers in the code base to give it like a new seed, like kind of like define the initial conditions for the blockchain. And that would be like, it kind of defines the compatibility of all those coins generated afterwards, right? You could go do that and create your own Bitcoin network. You call it something else, obviously. And it would start creating coins, right? And they would be like, you know, it's the same code base. It's like, you know, they're functionally equivalent to Bitcoins, except that you're on an incompatible blockchain and you could never like have transactions across the two of them because they wouldn't validate correctly, right? And you could do that, but what's the point, right?
What's the point? Yeah.
Okay. A good example of that, actually, like that's actually happened. Litecoin is a good example of that. So they were one of the earliest cryptocurrencies after Bitcoin, and they essentially forked the Bitcoin code base, changed a few things to make, I think they made like the block transactions faster. Basically, they changed like a few parameters in the code, and all other purposes, it's practically the exact same thing as Bitcoin, except that it's a separate coin with a separate brand with slightly different properties.
Yeah, and they're doing pretty well from what I can see.
They're doing fine, yeah.
Interesting. So then how does one know if I want to become a crypto investor, how do I choose what to invest in? Like, I don't want you to give it, you're not giving advice, but like, how do you choose what kind of coin to invest in? What kind of factors should you look for?
So if you're investing in the stock market, you don't know what to invest in, what do? You look for the big things, right? You look for the things that everybody else is investing in, and you can do that by looking at, for example, the market cap of the companies. What are the absolute largest companies out there, the ones with the highest value? You should look for things that indicate value in the coin, right? And the most obvious thing is like other people having value in the coin. So you can compare it to kind of like stock markets, I guess, in terms of like, if you don't know what to invest in the stock market, a decent place to start is looking at what everybody else invests in, right? So you can look at the companies that have the largest market cap or have like the highest trade volume or whatever, right? And those are things that people are investing in because they, you know, see that it's not a totally crazy investment. And you can kind of do the same thing with crypto, right? And this is, you know, obviously just a starting point. It's not necessarily anything that only the big things are worth investing in. But if you look at the cryptocurrency space, you know, there's thousands of coins out there and most of them are absolutely minuscule, you know, like they're kind of like penny stocks, right? You don't know the people behind them. There's not a whole lot of like backing behind them. You don't know if there's some sort of scam involved, right? Or, you know, penny stocks are kind of a similar way, right? Who knows what's going on in those companies? And they're very risky investments. And so putting your money in a penny stock, especially a lot of it, is probably not a great idea if you're trying to make a return on your investment. It's the same thing for the smaller cryptocurrencies. But that's kind of like a good first order way of looking at it. Like, what does everyone else invest in, right? What are people trusting? And that's a decent place to start. Beyond that, you want to look at things that like you find interesting. I mean, I think that's the, at least with crypto, that's how I invest in cryptocurrencies. I pick the ones that I think are interesting from a technical perspective and seem to have their ducks in a row for how things work. And then also offer something novel that's not easy to replicate. So that's what I was saying, like coins have different features, right? Like Bitcoin is kind of like the digital gold. It's the store of value that everybody trusts. And it's, you know, somewhat unlikely to go away because it's kind of like the de facto option. Next up would be something like Ethereum, because they're also very heavily trusted, but they've built this amazing software infrastructure on top of it. So their whole idea was like, rather than just having something to do basic transactions, they made it programmable with the concept of like smart contracts, where you can write a program that decides what to do with your coins on the Ethereum network. And you can essentially create like these autonomous contracts that anybody can communicate with via code and interact with. You can provide like services that are like totally digital. And that's really cool, right? That's not something that you can really do on Bitcoin so much. I think people have like built shims to be able to do that sort of thing on Bitcoin, but it's nowhere near the level of support that Ethereum has. And so that's amazing. You know, there's very few other coins out there that have anything that comes close to what Ethereum can do. But, you know, Ethereum doesn't have the same sort of like anonymity protection that coins like Monero or Zcash have. You know, like there's like, so what are the things that you're looking at in the coin? What's interesting? What's something that's not easily replicated? And those are the things I like to look at.
Make sure to come back tomorrow for part two of my interview with Brendan Wood. I learned so much about cryptocurrency and blockchain during this interview, even after doing some extensive research myself prior to talking to Brendan. Now, part two has even more gems, so make sure you tune in tomorrow.